Blog Talk Radio.
It's DJ Gatsby, a.k.a. Mr. Girl and the Sexy. We're live on the air, WBMG Radio, with my special guest, Grammy-nominated jazz guitarist Doc Powell in the building. Doc, how you doing, my brother?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, man, I was a little late getting on. I don't know what happened with my computer. I was doing some other things online, and then when I tried to log into the studio, it was getting in kind of slow, so please forgive me for that right there, my brother.
Oh, not at all. You know, I'm used to things popping up.
All right. But anyway, like I said, it's Doc Powell, legendary. I can't say enough about the jazz guitarist work that you do, man. For people out there listening that don't know who you are, give them a little, you know, brief description of, you know, who you are and what it is that you do.
Well, okay. I started out as a studio musician. Well, actually, I really started out playing in bands, you know, in Spring Valley, New York, where I grew up, where we grew up. I don't know if your listeners know that we actually kind of grew up together.
I'm going to get around to that.
Okay. And so I played in bands growing up, and then I played on my first recording session as a studio musician when I was 16. And after I finished high school, I went to college for a year, and then I started pursuing. I didn't continue college. I went to University of Charleston in Charleston, West Virginia, and I was transferring from there to study under Donald Byrd at North Carolina Central University. That was my goal. I really wanted to go to a black university. So I was accepted there. I was very excited, but I couldn't afford to pay the tuition, so that's where my professional career really started. I was a studio musician for a lot of years, and some of the just to fast forward a little bit to some of the highlights and things that really helped usher my career in kind of quickly was I met Luther Vandross right after he had recorded with the group Change. He had recorded the songs The Glow of Love and Searching, and that was very big, and a lot of people don't know that Luther actually was a very accomplished songwriter and arranger, mm-hmm. and one of the hottest jingle singers in the world. We met after the recording of those records, and it was time to record the second Change album. And so I worked on the Change album in Italy. I went to Italy for a month, and we recorded the second Change album, which was called Miracles, and the first BB&Q band. And we did that in Italy. And when I came back, I was hired for the company to be A&R and music director for both bands. And so I was hiring people and all this kind of stuff. I actually hired the lead singer for both groups. The lead singer, of course, I went straight to home, and I hired James Crab Robinson, who I grew up with in Spring Valley. Yeah, he's from NIAC, and he became the new lead singer of Change. And another friend of mine who I met, he was originally from North Carolina, and he moved to Spring Valley. And his name was Isaac Floyd, and so I got him hired as the lead singer of the BBQ band. And so things didn't work out. I'm sorry?
I said great choices with those lead singers for both of those bands, two talented singers, you know, from Rockland County, man.
Yeah, those brothers could sing and play guitar, both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Luther didn't sing on the second Change album, but he did do some background work on it. And things didn't work out with me and Change, the producer and founder of the group, was quite a dictator. And I've been very blessed to not have to work for you know, crazy people in the music business.
Okay.
So, you know, it's I've been very blessed to not have to do that, you know, and to not like feel like I have to do it, you know. Lots of times people do feel pressure that they have to stay in certain situations, and I just was determined that I wasn't going to live my life like that in any area of my life, whether it be, you know, my career or anything personal. So anyway, soon after that, I met Luther, and he was promoting Never Too Much, and we actually met in a recording studio. I was good friends with the engineer, Michael Brower, who was recording a lot of Luther's original songs, because, you know, he was getting his production thing moving while he was enjoying the success of Never Too Much. And so he was trying to put his team together, like who was it going to be that I call every time I want to record and I want to perform. So he wanted some new faces, and, you know, I was chosen to come work on the recording session. Right after the session, he comes to me and he says, hey, you know, I really enjoyed your playing. He said, I would love for you to go on the road with me to promote my new album, Never Too Much. You know, we'll have a ball. And he said it like that. Very, you know, he was very sweet, very nice guy. And he was very excited, you know, to ask me that. And he said, you know, think about it and let me know. And one of my big brothers in the music business was Yogi Horton, drummer from New Jersey, from Teaneck, New Jersey. And he had so much more experience than I, so he was my go-to person. And he was actually on the recording session as well. So I told him that Luther had asked me, and he said, oh, yeah, he asked me too, and we're doing it. There's nothing to think about. He's going to be large.
He's part of the first. Okay, yeah. Wow.
And so that turned into about 15 years.
Yeah, I told you, you know, I followed your career all the way from high school and Spring Valley's band and the jazz band, whatever it is you guys are doing over there. And I've just been a lifelong fan, man. You know, as you mentioned before, born and raised in Spring Valley, attended college in Charleston. What you didn't mention, and I'm going to go through a few things, is that you worked with Wilson Pickett. You were his musical director, and that was before you started working with Luther Vandross. Now, but you also worked with a lot of people, you know, before you actually got your solo career, not before, even after, but Stevie Wonder, Bob James, Bill Washington Jr., Aretha Franklin, Quincy Jones. I mean, I've read Teddy Pendergrass as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you were doing a lot before you even dropped your first album. And I must mention that that first album, Love Is Where It's At, released in 1987, received a Grammy nomination for Best R&B Instrumental for your cover of Marvin Gaye's What's Going On. So kudos to you for that.
Yeah.
How did that feel?
Yeah.
I mean, you've been a session guy, you've been on tour, and then you go solo, your first album that you drop, you get nominated for a Grammy. Tell us a bit about that and that whole experience right there.
Well, you know, that was kind of weird. It was great, but it was like one of the it was the beginning of me understanding the phrase, life is bittersweet, and I'll explain. That was my first record, like we said, and I was fortunate to be able to co-produce on my first record, along with my A&R director, who was my co-producer on my first album. And, you know, I was able to dictate a lot of things that normally, you know, a new artist doesn't get to do. I had my hands on a lot of things. And so, but I think I heard that record played, or something from that album played on the radio once, okay? I signed a contract with Seven Options, and they renewed my contract to do another record. And I was like, because I didn't sell a lot of records at all. Like I said, I didn't even hear it on the radio, especially at home in New York. I was actually in California up late one night with my family and heard the record and freaked out.
Wow.
Never heard it any other time. So, like I said, they picked up the option to do another record. And I was like, wow, because I just knew I was going to be dropped. You know, it's like, okay, this was a
amazing
flop, you know. And so, no, they picked up my option to do another record. I had things moving forward, man. I was going to have Grover Washington. I had all kinds of people lined up to work on the record. And long story short, I was dropped from the label, which was a breach of contract because we both signed, you know, that I was going to do
yeah.
so. But, you know, it's one of those stories where, you know, if you got to have money to go to court and sue people. And I
now
just did not have it. Yeah, that was
Polygram
Mercury.
Yep.
Yeah,
that was probably not Mercury.
And,
now they were struggling around that time anyway, though, weren't they? With the other,
they were going through some transition.
Okay.
They were transitioning because my CD was one of the first projects to be an actual physical CD.
Yeah, that transition from vinyl
so
to CD.
You know, so a lot of new things were happening. So fast forward from that, next thing you know, I get dropped from the label, and then the Grammy nominations come out, and I'm nominated for a Grammy.
Wow.
So I get nominated for a Grammy, so I think I don't want to cut you off.
For you to be, you know, a session guy in the game for a while, all of a sudden you drop your first album, you get nominated for a Grammy. I mean, it's kind of a blessing and a curse because, you know, where do you go from now? Like, your expectations, you set the bar so high for yourself. Out the gate, Grammy nomination, how do you – that's the bar is really set. Was there any pressure for you to put another record out or to try to achieve that same level of success on your next project?
The pressure for me was to, praying that Well, the thing was, it learning. It was a big learning season for me then, you know, because
okay.
You have all these questions, everything that you just said, you know, but I didn't have time to even think about that kind of pressure because I wasn't on a label, you know.
Oh, that's right.
So
that's right.
Where
you're
I was, you know,
looking for
I was dropped.
That.
So, but I'm thinking, okay, well. Hey, at least I got a Grammy nomination. It should be easy for me to get a record deal. No, it wasn't. That was one
well,
of the
hardest
things.
Well, the airplane
was to get another
there.
Record deal.
Yeah. All right. So, but even after the success, you know, it looks like you obviously moved on. I see 1992, you dropped The Doctor. In 96, you obviously signed to Discovery. And you had three albums with them, Laid Back, Inner City Blues, and Don't Let the Smooth Jazz Fool You.
Yeah.
That's somewhere along the time.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, you got that deal, and those three albums dropped. You know, you're doing good. You know, you're back.
Well,
I was
doing much better than good because those three records, I licensed to them. Those three records were on my label, and I gave them the license permission for a few years to distribute those records.
Smart move. Shrewd business move, man. Shrewd business move.
And, it wasn't something that was my intention. You know, I grew up a Bugs Bunny fan and Warner Brothers, anything Warner Brothers cartoons and movies did. You know, I was a Warner Brothers, and I wanted to be on Warner Brothers label, okay?
Okay. Well-known,
so,
big label. In the 90s?
Yeah, and so those records were distributed. You know, Discovery was a Warner Brother label, so I got to experience that. But starting with Inner City Blues, you back up, and Inner City Blues was the first record that I did independently, and I really was not trying to do that. It just turned out that way. I got a distribution deal in Japan with JVC, and I licensed my record to them, and then so I was like, okay, well, I'm officially a label, so I just kept it moving. And Inner City Blues record had the song "We'll Make It Last," which has been one of my biggest songs to date, you know, and it's still in rotation. It has never went out of rotation since the release of Inner City Blues.
You know, that's a classic. That's a classic song. And I did read up on it. I was on Wikipedia looking at the albums, and then they'll tell you the best song single from the album. When I went in your discography, I saw that. And you did really good, man. I think when you came out, 87, 92, a lot of people probably didn't know you. They knew you from, you know, your work with Luther. But I think when you came out with Laid Back, Inner City Blues, and that other album, you know, Don't Let the Smooth Jazz Fool You, now you're firmly established as that Grammy-nominated jazz guitarist. You know, you're a sought after session guy. You know, you're on tour. You got a lot of things going on. Now, but somewhere around there, you had music that was featured on the film, the classic film, The Five Heartbeats, as well as the movie with Eddie Murphy, Down and Out in Beverly Hills. How did that come about? Because I know a lot of artists would love to have songs on movie soundtracks. And again, you know, you're trendsetting with that. How did that come about, getting your music on those two films?
Well, actually, it wasn't my music. It was my playing. I played on the soundtrack to those films.
Okay.
I was a studio musician hired, and I played on the soundtrack. Luther wrote songs on Down and Out in Beverly Hills. So that's how I got on that that film. The Five Heartbeats, I was a studio musician, and I worked for Steve Tyrell and George Duke, and they produced the music for those films. I was actually in a scene in that, and so that's how I got on those films. And then I also worked on Turner and Hooch, the soundtrack for that, the Tom Hanks film. Yeah.
Wow.
And The Goonies.
And The Goonies as well. Wow. Anyway, it's DJ Gassy. You listen to WBMG Radio. We're in the studio with Doc Powell, legendary Grammy-nominated jazz guitarist. I got somebody on the line. Maybe they have a question for Doc. Hold on a second.
Okay.
I'm calling from the 954 area code. You have a question or comment for Doc Powell? I don't know, that person may be just listening. Let's see if they're on there. Hold on. They're on the air. They're probably just listening. Anyway, we have somebody else that's calling from the 310 area code, 310-994. You're on the air. You have a question for Doc Powell?
Yes, I do. Hi, my name is Ina. I'm from Los Angeles. I'm a huge fan of Doc Powell. I was wondering, where could we possibly get to see you next perform?
Wow, your voice sounds familiar, Ina, California. You know, I lived in California for like 25 years. I don't know.
What's
sounds
next?
Familiar. But anyway,
let's see you.
I'm going to be at the Seabreeze Jazz Festival this April, celebrating my birthday weekend. I'm trying to do an annual thing every year on my birthday, and fortunately, this year I'll be at the Seabreeze Jazz Festival April 22nd. We're working on dates. I may be in San Diego in February, but there are a lot of things up in the air right now. They're not confirmed, but if you check back on my website, docpowell.com, or check my Facebook page at Doc Powell. You'll see dates that are we're going to post dates that are confirmed as soon as they come in.
That sounds awesome. I can't wait to see you live. You're awesome live, and I love your new album, This Is Soul. It's slamming.
Oh, thank you very much. Where did you see me perform?
Oh, I've seen you perform in several places here in Los Angeles. The jazz festivals that you did out this way. I've seen you perform with Luther Vandross. Several years ago, I've been to Kirk Franklin concerts. I mean, I'm a huge fan,
wow.
As you mentioned, you performed everywhere and with all the best, and your sound is very unique. So I really love your music. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for calling in.
Yeah, Ian, thanks for calling. Keep listening. Keep listening, too, by the way. We're almost done, but we have a lot more to talk to him about. As I said, it's Sports DJ Gassy, WBMG Radio. We're here with Doc Powell, American jazz guitarist and nominated jazz musician in the building. Now, Doc, you talked about the Discovery deal that you had, Laid Back, Inner City Blues, and Don't Let the Smooth Jazz Fool You. You come up in 1999 again after a two-year hiatus.
Mm-hmm.
You're on another label. You drop I Claim Victory. Little different sound as I started listening to it. Tell us a bit about that particular album, because you change the direction. The sound is still there, but there's a little different way. Tell us a bit about that album.
Okay. I Claim the Victory. That was a real important time in my life. When I moved to California, I joined the West Angeles Church of God in Christ. The pastor is Bishop mm-hmm. Charles E. Blake. And so my wife and I and my family, we got very involved in the church. And this was a man who was preaching four times on Sunday morning and then a fifth sermon Sunday night. So he needed a bigger facility. I went to a meeting one night, and Denzel Washington spoke.
Wow.
And he said he challenges everybody to do he wants to challenge everyone to do their best, you know, whatever it is that you do, find the best thing that you can do and do that to help make this vision come to pass. So I started thinking, okay, well, the best thing I could do is make a record, you know, make a record. I'll make a gospel record, and I'll donate all the proceeds to the building fund. And so
wow.
That's what I did. I made the record, I donated it to the building fund, and I found people in the that were a part of the choir, you know, that were great singers but weren't always the ones featured, you know. So I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll kill two birds with one stone. I'll get a chance to let some people get to shine a little bit that never had the, you know, that aren't getting the opportunity to. And so that's what I did, and I recorded that record. I claimed the victory, and I even had Ollie Woodson on that record. Ollie Woodson was a member of the church as well.
Wow, fantastic, man. Kudos to you for doing that. Again, you know, it shows that you got compassion as well as spirituality in your music. We all know it's a blessing to have the talent and to be able to use that in the way that you did was definitely a blessing, man, and kudos to you. The title of that song kind of spoke to me, and that's why I said, well, let me see what that album is all about. Now, you go in there, you're to do a Windham Hill Jazz Collection album in 1999. 2001, you do Love's Changes. I listened to some tracks from that. But the 97th and Columbus album stood out to me in 2003. New York, and, you know, we got TV 101 Jazz in New York at that time. Jazz is heavy in New York, contemporary jazz, with a lot of the other artists that you work with. I thought was a change for you, too. I mean, it seemed like you just keep coming, you know, every time I say I haven't heard Doc in a while, you know, what is he doing, what's going on, I hear a new record, man. Tell us about 97th and Columbus, particularly the title and how that record kind of, you know, kept your career going.
Yeah, well, you know, I wanted to tap into that inspiration, the things that, you know, you're excited about, that feeling when, you know, What excites you? Why do you do this? You know, what is it? You know, what are the songs that, you know, and the type of music that and musicians that you love to play with? What makes you stay in this thing? And so I just wanted to rekindle that vibe, and I just kept thinking about the days at Mikel's nightclub on 97th and Columbus. And that was a very big, important part of my career, because that's how Luther Vandross heard about me. You know, that's why it was easy for him to accept the recommendation, because he had heard about me and he'd seen me play at Mikel's. So I just wanted to rekindle that and pay homage to that time. And Pat and Mike Mikel were the owners, and you know, they're very good to me. I think I played there on a Monday night once, and after that, I might have played in the middle of the week, but I went straight to playing there Friday and Saturday. And, that was before I recorded. I didn't even have a record. So only the weekends were held for the recording artists. And if you weren't a recording artist and you were playing there Friday and Saturday, then you were putting some bodies in the seats. And so that was a very, very important time to me. And so that's why I did the record 97 and Columbus and dedicated to them.
Now, you it looks like you got to deal with Heads Up, because you do three records with them in collaboration with another company. You do 97 and Columbus. You do Cool Like That. And then you finally release a self-titled album, which is a signature album for most artists. You know, a lot of artists do, you know, theme albums or different types of titles. You did a self-titled album. I know it's very important to you, man. Tell us a little bit about that project. That's in 2006. Now we're getting really contemporary jazz now. You got the subtitle. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, I thought that it was, you know, time for me to do that. You know, the funny thing is that even now I still find people that don't really know who Doc Powell is. You know, a lot of people are familiar with me, with my work with Luther Vandross, and a lot of people know who the doctor is, which is what Luther called me affectionately, and Luther sang that on two songs on platinum albums, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, he had a song called She Loves, first time he did it, he had a song called She Loves Me Back. And, you know, he did a lot of his vocals while we were recording. And sometimes he would, you know, give us instructions while we were recording, you know, so he would get capitalize on the inspiration, you know, the spontaneous moment. And
yeah.
We get to this part where he wanted the music to break down, which means, you know, he wanted different most of the instruments to drop out and just be drums and then build everyone back up. So when it was time for me to come back in with the guitar, he sings, you know, this man is a doctor, blah, blah, blah. And so we thought it was a joke. It was funny. We laughed. And then we go back on the road, and his assistant, Bruce Wallace, comes up to me and says, oh, you're going to be famous. I said, what are you talking about? He said, oh, Luther's going to make you famous. He said, he sang your name on the record. I said, he's taking that off. He said, no, you'll see.
Oh.
He's keeping it on there. I was like, wow.
That's a great story, man. Yeah, I got a question for you. Marcus Miller, wasn't he part of that? Because I know there was another guy who did a lot of arranging.
Yeah.
Was that Marcus Miller?
Yeah, Marcus Miller started out playing on the sessions as well.
Great,
and
good.
Co-writing, and he moved from co-writing and playing to co-producing and playing. Co-producing and writing and playing. Him and Luther became a very good songwriting team. Luther and Marcus Miller, or Luther and Ned Alley Jr., and our second keyboardist in the group, Skip Anderson as well.
Yeah, I'm kind of a music aficionado, man. Collect a lot of albums, DJed for a long time, and I like to read credits too. All right, listen, we're about to wrap up. There's a few more things I wanted to get into real quick. You did a self-titled album. You do For Old Time's Sake. Again, you took off for a few years, which I get. You know, I noticed there were a lot of artists after longevity in the business. You relish that time when you're out on the road, you're touring, or just enjoying, you know, your life and the fruits of the labor. And you get a chance to bask in the glory of your success. You come out with 2010 For Old Time's Sake. A good record. I listened to a lot of the songs. But again, at that point in time, jazz radio is really taking a hit. You know, CD 101 leaves New York. You don't have a lot of jazz radio around the country.
Right.
And things are kind of different for jazz musicians. Now, you come out with This Is Soul, and it's like you've reinventing yourself again, man. The A&R push is there. The promotions is there. The publicity is there. You know, your top 20 is on Billboard in a category. What has this record, This Is Soul, done for you in your career? I mean, I know you've had success. What has this particular record done for you, and what does this particular record mean to you?
This record is doing, you know, this record is still in the process of achieving a lot of things, living its life. This is the beginning of me really, I guess this is just a very pivotal point for me, because I'm not doing side work like I used to. I'm not doing all the TV stuff like I used to. Now it's this season in my life is all about my records and my career, and it's going really, really great. You know, I'm very excited. This is a very exciting time of my life. So This Is Soul is just, you know, me pouring out all that I am, you know, and then you know, to actually, you know, pay, you know, unfortunately have to pay tribute to the life of Prince on that CD, but you know, at the same time, it still was an honor, especially since I got to have a conversation with him and be on stage with him. And it's a very, very important record. And I wanted to make a record that was upbeat.
Yeah.
That, you know, and just had you moving and grooving. At first I was thinking, well, you know, this is soul. I was going to pay homage to a lot of the classic records that I've loved over my career. But it wound up that I did some of that, but for the most part, I just wanted to tap into that feeling that you get when you listen to great music from start to finish, you know, how it just inspires your soul, how it motivates you, it makes you feel good, you know, and frees you from a lot of stuff, you know. I just wanted to do something very positive, and I got to tell you, you know, this is the first record in a long time that I keep listening to. You know, I'm very, I'm my worst critic, you know. I can get sick of myself real quick. But let me tell you, I love this record. I'm very proud of this record. I wrote a lot of songs in this record. I mixed this record and produced this record. You know, and I co-produced Love on Top along with Big Jim Wright and Daniel Moore. Big Jim Wright is a songwriter and a producer that has been involved in the Jimmy Jam Terry Lewis camp for a long time. He's involved in a lot of hits, and he's even right now he's Mariah Carey's music director, and Daniel Moore is out there as well, working with Mariah Carey, and we did the Monique Show together, and that's kind of
I was going to say wasn't that his band on the Monique Show? Yeah, I follow you guys a little bit. I know a little bit about what's going on. Some of these names are ringing bells, man.
Well, you've always been a music man, so I'm not surprised.
Absolutely. Listen, one question I want to ask you. A lot of people go into music business. What do you contribute your longevity and success in this industry? Everybody says there's crooks, there's devils, there's sharks.
Right.
You know,
right.
People, you know, lives get ruined between, you know, relationships and drugs and all kinds of things. What do you contribute your longevity to, man, in this career? Well over 20 years.
Yeah. How many years?
Well, 87 was the first album. So I'm not too good at math. Well, do we want to say 30 years?
Yeah.
30 years. Okay,
yeah,
I stand corrected. 30 years. What do you contribute your success to, man? What do you contribute your success to? For all those young people out there in the music business that's trying to get it, particularly instrumentalists, because you got a lot of people who don't really play instruments. But for those out there who are playing instruments or those who admire those who do, man, 30 years in the game and still, you know, irrelevant.
Yeah.
What do you, you know, what do you contribute your success to?
Jeff, it's a lot of things. I remember back, like I mentioned earlier, my big brother in the business was Yogi Horton. And one thing Yogi said to me back then, because I moved into Manhattan, I was living in Corona, Queens, okay, and from Spring Valley, New York. So that's under 40 miles, you know. The George Washington Bridge is only 20 miles from where we grew up. And when I started getting around Manhattan and playing on sessions and playing with multiple artists at the same time, you know.
Yeah.
People were trying to figure out where the heck did I come from. You know, people thought
that's
I was from Pomona, California.
That's a culture shock. That's a culture shock, man, from the Hudson Valley to New York City.
Yeah, they were trying to figure out where I came from. And Yogi said to me, he said, yeah, man, he said, you'll always remember, people got to like you in this business, man, you know. And so that's an important element, you know. You have to remember, you have to check your ego at the door, you know.
Sure.
You have to stay humble. You have to stay dedicated to what it is that you're trying to pursue. You know, you have to hone your craft and you have to stay on top of it. Being a session musician, playing on records and singing on records and being an engineer in the music business, I mean, any aspect of it, and you know this yourself from what you do, you have to stay on top of the game.
Absolutely,
no one
man.
Should come to you and ask you something, you know, have a request of you that you can't deliver on some decent level.
You
have to knock the ball out of the park all the time. But sometimes you're in areas, gray areas. Like I played on the TV show Walking Tall, which was country music. You know.
Didn't know that.
Okay. that helped keep the lights on, because of just my little bit of experience with country music and loving what the guitar did, because I was dedicated to what the guitar did, you know. And so I was always open to different styles, you know. Not everybody can do one thing, you know. You can't, you know, and make a living, you know. Some people do, and God bless them, you know. But it didn't happen that way for me. I wound up having 15 years of recording and touring with gospel artist Kirk Franklin, you know?
You have to be diverse.
You have to humble yourself to what it is you're trying to achieve and understand that you're trying to achieve something that you don't have. Okay.
Okay.
So you have to work on your craft. You have to stay open, listen to criticism, and surround yourself by people that you can learn from. Don't be, you know, I had one of my mentors was a saxophone player growing up in Spring Valley. His name was Conrad Brown, and Conrad always said to me, he said, man, you could really, I see a great future ahead of you. He said, but do one thing, man, always make sure that you surround yourself with people that are better than you so you can keep learning, you know.
Keep learning.
And to this day, that's what I'm doing. I always have great people around me. I've been blessed to have, you know, my Luther Vandross family and my Kirk Franklin family, just great, talented people that you just learn from, that you can always call. And anytime you get together, you know, you're always blessed by each other's gift, you know. You're always enlightened. And, you know, besides, the, you know, all of the legends that, you know, you can spend a lifetime studying, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, and be, you know, you have to be a dependable person in this business, too.
You can't miss flights.
You can't show up late. If somebody, if the recording at their house or recording at a major studio, time is money. Money is time. Show up on time. Respect what a person has to, has called you for, and what they're trying to do.
Speaking of time, we're almost out of time.
You have to be well balanced, you know, and deliver.
All right. Yeah, speaking of time, we're almost out of time. Anyway, man, thanks, Doc, for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. It's WBMG Radio with DJ Gaspar. Anything you want to say to your fans and friends out there before I let you go?
I would just like to say, for those who know me and who have supported me, thank you so much. And I look forward to seeing you on tour this year. This is going to be a very busy year for me. So email me, hit me up on Facebook at Doc Powell. Or email me at docpowell.com. You can check out the website, and just look for a lot of engagements.
Yeah, definitely look for Doc. He's going to be on tour this year, all over the country, maybe all over the world, man. You got a really popular in Japan. I saw that online.
Yeah.
They're about to shut me down over here. Once again, WBMG Radio, DJ Gatsby, special guest, Grammy-nominated jazz guitarist Doc Powell. Doc, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate the support. Continued success, my brother. Sorry to get a chance to play more music. I am going to close out with that song, Shoop Shoop, featuring Jennifer Holliday. And everybody, thanks for calling. Have a great night. And to all the listeners that didn't get through, I just didn't get a chance to put you on. Doc, they were there. I couldn't get a chance to put them on, man. The conversation was so tight. So, man, God bless, man. I'll be in touch because I want to see you just as much as the young lady in L.A. wants to see you on tour. So,
yeah.
I hope to see you out there on the road as well, Doc.
Yeah, same here, Jeff, and thank you so much. My pleasure.
All right. Good, everybody. Take care. Peace.